Well, hopefully at the end of the line, when it's picked up, we will be speaking, hopefully, to one of the youngest, if not the youngest captain ever of Leighton Orient, and it's Darren Purse. Hello, Darren.
How's it going? How's it going, Andrew? Okay?
Yes, I'm not too bad, and we always start these chats under these terrible days that we're suffering at the moment with a quick check that you and your family, everybody concerned, is fine at the moment.
No, everyone's okay. Yeah, everyone's okay. Obviously, I know it's really testing times for everybody, but actually enjoying a little bit of time off. You know, I'm trying to use it as a bit of a reset button with everything that goes on. I've been busy, so it's nice to have a bit of time off. But hopefully, everybody that's listening is staying safe and not affected too much by what's going on.
No, so you haven't been pushed into any DIY then?
Oh, I've done all that, mate. The house is looking spotless. It's all good. I've actually quite enjoyed having a little bit of time off. I've always been really busy over the last sort of couple of years with the coaching and managing and that sort of stuff and finishing off playing at non-league football. So it's nice to have a bit of time off and, as I said, have a little bit of a reset and ready to go again when the football season kicks off again.
Yeah, well, we're all waiting to see what happens there. I mean, what's your gut feeling where that's concerned?
I don't know, to be fair. Obviously, speaking to a few people around the place, I think the boys will come back sort of May time, middle of May, to a couple of weeks pre-season. I think they're talking about trying to get as many games in June, maybe beginning of July as they can, even if they start behind closed doors, I think. And then obviously finish this season, have a couple of weeks off, and then go again, ready to start the new season, probably beginning of September. So I think that's where I think it will be, but who am I? I'm a nobody in the football state, so who knows?
You know, I wouldn't say that because I mean I'm just looking down your stats, Dan, and they're actually quite astounding because as a player, and I mean that's where you got your head around here, you've had a quarter of a century as a player. I mean, with there's a select little club, isn't there? You know, like people like Scott McLeish and yourself that can make it as an outfield player for 25 years is quite an achievement.
Yeah, I always wanted to play as long as I could. And I think you go through the years and everybody always said to me, play as long as you can. You got the rest of your life to coach, to manage and do whatever you need to do. But play as long as you can. And I've always loved football. You know, I love watching it, but more importantly, I love playing it and being involved in it. Lucky enough to carry on playing. I end up finishing up at Enfield at 41. So, yeah, to have sort of 25 years within football and playing, I did okay and my body still held up. So, thoroughly proud of that and proud of the career that I had.
Now, you had some big, big clubs chasing you early doors when you were a young lad, you know, like Arsenal and that. And you actually chose Orient above those sort of sides.
Yeah, obviously, I was a young lad. You wouldn't believe it now, but I was quite a bright boy at school. And at sort of 15, 16, I had every intention of staying on the school. And I wanted to be a pilot. Obviously, I got offered apprenticeships at three different clubs. Millwall offered me one, and that was a hard one to turn down, because that was my boyhood club. I love supporting them. But obviously, Arsenal and Tottenham as well all offered me apprenticeships. But I spoke to, obviously, Bernie Dixon was the academy manager, or the youth development officer at Orient, and he pulled me aside and said, look, we don't want you to sign an apprenticeship with us. We want to sign you as a professional. We can't do that until you're 17. So we want you to come in, train with the first team, play for the reserves, play for the youth team, and true to their word, as soon as I turned 17 in February, I signed my first professional contract and made my debut 3 days later. So it was a bit of a whirlwind as a young lad, and the best decision I made was to obviously drop down the leagues and do what I did. And Orient was a great club to be involved with and to make my debut for.
Was Peter Eustace still in charge at that time?
Peter Eustace was still in charge. Obviously, Frank Clark was in charge early doors within that. And then, obviously, Peter Eustace came in, and then Frank went upstairs, didn't he? He was managing director.
Yeah.
And that was the situation, obviously. So I made my debut under Peter Eustace away at Brighton. Came on as a second half sub, which was brilliant. And I think I went on to play sort of 75, 80 games for the club. In hard times, you know, with what was going on around the football club, and obviously the relegation to League Two now, Division Three, It was hard, but a brilliant baptism of fire for myself as a young footballer coming through, and probably helped me have the career that I had.
Now, I mean, obviously, whoever was in charge at the time saw something in you, because at 17, you were made the captain of the team. I mean, I think that still stands as the all-time record at the club. I mean, that is extremely young, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And obviously, I've always been known, even as a young lad coming through, I was always known as a bit of a captain, a leader, sort of. I wasn't scared of sort of saying my piece, if you know what I mean. But I thought, between me and you and everybody else that's listening, I think it was more of the club were in dire straits sort of financially, and they were looking to try and sell someone. And who had better to do it than a 17-year-old lad that's played 20, 30 games for the club, making captain? It might stick an extra note on the end of the obviously transfer fee, you know. So I think there was. As much as, I don't know, I don't think I deserved to be captain at the time, but I think there was a reason why they were doing it, and probably trying to nick a few more quid for me as a young footballer coming through.
Now, when you went into the youth team, that would have been under John Sitton?
Yeah, Sitts was the youth team manager at the time. But I was lucky. I didn't have to clean boots. Glenn Wilkie's my best mate. You know, we've been pals since we were 6 years of age. And Wilkes was always in there cleaning the boots with like Courtney and people like that, but Lee Shearer, another one. So I always hung around and I sort of helped him out and did what I did, but I never really had to do jobs. So I was lucky from that respect. But played in all the youth team games on a Saturday. Obviously, lucky enough back in them days to play reserve team football on a Wednesday afternoon or a Wednesday evening. So started playing reserve team football at 16 years of age, and it was a brilliant learning curve for me.
Well, that's a point I was trying to make to people last season. I said I think that you know, the lower clubs like Orient now, they're really suffering from the lack of an organised reserve league midweek. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it. I think it's vital for clubs to have these, but how do you feel about them?
No, I'm with you on that. I think there needs to be a bit more of a competitive league. You go around football at the minute and the under 21, under 23 leagues are, they're good, you know, but they don't have that competitive edge sometimes that players need to do. But obviously, with my role at Oxford, what I do is obviously I'm head of loan management as well. So it's trying to obviously put boys out on loan at non-league football clubs, whether that be the Conference South, Ryman Prem, them sort of. So on a Saturday afternoon, they're at 3 o'clock, they're playing for 3 points. And there's no better baptism of fire and realising what football's all about than when you go to the non-league sides and you're playing competitive football. And I think that's what was great about the old reserve league, the old Pumping League, I think it was called. It was always for 3 points you were playing for on a Wednesday afternoon, a Wednesday evening. And if you didn't play on the Saturday and you was a pro, you played on a Wednesday. And that was the way it was. And it helped push people through. You know, with that experience, especially as young lads playing with the more experienced pros, I think it's missing from the game a little bit now, and I don't know if it'll ever come back.
Well, it's also a max fitness question, really, isn't it? You know, if you're playing regularly, you're in a better position if you are called upon.
Yeah, of course. I think there is that, but I think if you look at players nowadays, they're all athletes. You know, they're all highly tuned young men that, obviously, even if they're not playing, they keep themselves as fit as they can. Whereas back in the day, if you weren't playing, you could go out and have a few beers every now and then and let yourself go a little bit. So, yeah, there is that, obviously, about being match sharp. But I think if you look at the players nowadays, they are real athletes and they do look after themselves more often than not.
Now, your first coaches are normally ones that leave an impression on you, I think, in any business, your first managers, etc. Whatever you do for a living, they're the ones you sort of will remember all your life. So, John yeah. Sitton, we know, you know, as John, I've always actually said to his face, you're Marmite, John. I think people either like you or they don't. And he wasn't very pleased with that comment. But, you know, he did get what I meant. He did understand what I meant. And, you know, I've always gotten well with John, but I know some people, you know, find him difficult to handle. So how did you actually find John?
Well, obviously, I was probably one of the lucky ones. I came through the youth team with Sitt. So, you know, he was my manager at youth team level from sort of 15, 16 years of age. I was playing with him. It helped with, for me, being a defender, centre-half, which Sitt was, you know. But I'd never have a bad word say about him. Obviously, with all the coaches I worked under throughout my career, he would be in my top, if not my top one as a coach. You know, he taught me so much coming through that as a young lad at 17 years of age, 16 years of age, he's teaching me all the tricks of the trade that you need to make it in the game.
Oh, I think you'd be delighted to hear that. He says a Brian Clough quote there is in the top one. I think Sitz would enjoy that quote, wouldn't he? 25-year career, Darren, and you'd picked him as number one. That's a big accolade, isn't it?
No, but he was. He was an excellent coach, and the football's poorer because he's not involved in the game. You know, I look at what he taught me as a young centre-half within the sort of year, 18 months that I was there, and he gave me a great grounding within the game of football. You know, to not just like the nice things in football. You know what I mean? There are times when football can be a horrible, horrible game. You know, and he taught me along that sort of when you needed a kick up the backside, he'd give it to you. You know, and I think nowadays there's too many players or young players that get given everything on a plate and they haven't seen sort of the nasty side of football a little bit. And sometimes you need that because it can give you that extra little cook, that extra little kick, that extra little incentive to go and to make yourself that better player.
Yeah. Do you think with a club like Orient, Darren, that you started there, and obviously the wages weren't great. So, and obviously as your careers progressed, you did get to earn some decent money. So, do you think you were more appreciative of that because you started at a lower level and you put more value onto it because you started at the bottom level?
Yeah, I think you sort of. You could say you earn it a little bit more. The football was never about money for me. I was lucky enough to learn.
Just as well you were at the Orient then.
It was never about money. I left West Brom. I had 2 years left on my contract and walked away from my contract at West Brom to go and sign for Cardiff. You know, I could have sat at West Brom earning a lot more money than I was earning at Cardiff. But I wanted to look back on my career and play as many games as I could at the highest level that I could and be the best player that I could every single game, every single training session. And that's how I got through. That's what made me have the career that I had. I was a bang average footballer. I wasn't a great footballer at all. I made the best out of my ability just because I wanted to be the best that I wanted to be. You know, so
I think you had an ability to read the game, Darren. I think that's what it was. As you say, you know, if you're saying like ball skills, etc., you know, taking it individually, you may have a point to say, well, I was only as good as him or as him as him. But, you know, that's only one side of the game, isn't it? You know, the mental side and be able to read it and get there quickly because you've read it quickly and a lot quicker than some others. I think that side of your game was, for a young lad, was well in front of anybody else.
I don't think technical. I think if you looked at me as a technical player, I don't think I'd have stood out as much. But I think I had that sort of leadership qualities. As I said, I could sort of boss people about. I could talk my way through a game, and I can read a game quite well. I think that's probably why I played on as long as I could, because I read the game as well as what I did. So but that's football, and there's more than one way to play football, and I played my football in a different way.
Now, just before we move on from Orient, you know, that season they got relegated. I mean, I look back at that side, and you look at the players they had, and you think, how did that happen? Because individually, one by one, when you go through the team, there were some blooming good players, wasn't there?
Should never have got relegated. You go through Elsie Hildy, was in goal. I think Hildy was a top-class goalkeeper from players that you've played against and with. He did play at a higher level, but definitely deserved to play at a higher level. You had obviously people like Gary Bellamy at centre-half, Terry Howard, you know, players like that. Glenn Cockerill in the middle of the park.
Yeah, Ian Bogue.
Ian Bogue. But listen, Bogues was probably one of the most talented players I've ever played with. You know, he was superb. Danny Carter one side, you know. We were a top-class side. Westy up top. And as you said, you look at it and you think, how the hell did we get relegated? But that's football at the end of the day. So if you don't go out and I think if you look at that side, I just don't think it had that sort of winning mentality, whether or not that would have been because of what was going on off of the pitch.
Yeah, I was going to say that to you. How much of the effect was that on you at the time? You know, what was going on with the Rwanda and Tony Wood selling and, you know, the club in complete disarray, if you like, behind the scenes. Was that having an effect in the dressing room?
And that's what's either for me personally, it didn't. You know, I was earning 100 quid a week. You know, I was living at home with my parents. It didn't affect me. as I said, all I wanted to do was just go out there and play football, because it wasn't in it for the money or anything. But then you look at players like, obviously, Colin West, Glenn Cockrell, Bellas, people like that, Hildy, they all had, obviously, mortgages to pay, rent to pay, and families. And sometimes when you are looking over your shoulder worrying where that next pay packet is, it can affect your game, and I think probably did affect us off the pitch, because obviously on the pitch, I don't think the side that we had should have got relegated, because we were far for that.
Yeah, you had a short period of loan in Finland, but £100,000 took you to Oxford in '96, didn't it? Under Dennis Smith, yep. Wasn't it the boss then?
Yes.
Obviously, you're back at Oxford, so that's a club that you've enjoyed your time with, I take it.
Obviously, I was only there for a similar sort of time as Orion, really. I was only there for 18 months, got signed for $100,000. Dennis Smith was, obviously, when you talk about coaches, obviously, Sitz would have been up there. Dennis Smith was the best manager I played under. You know, obviously, I signed for Oxford, we were in the Championship then, and for the budget that he had and the team that he assembled to finish where they did the year that I was there was phenomenal. You know, we just finished it. We finished in seventh place, just outside the playoffs, for a side as small as Oxford to do that in the old Championship, or the Championship now, was unbelievable. And that's why I say he's one of the best managers I've worked under, on the budget he had to finish where they was. And I said I was there for 18 months, played probably 70 games, and learnt again off people like, I was playing alongside people like Matty Elliott, and you know, another top class centre half. And I was at that age, I was just learning all the time, and Oxford was a perfect fit for me at that moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, as a young, 20, 21-year-old, you got a pretty big move for, what was at the time, about 600,000, wasn't it, to Birmingham, which is, you know, that was a big move, wasn't it, in 98?
Yeah, I was lucky enough that the moves that I had, and obviously when my agent was getting them for me, he slowly moved me up the divisions as he was going along, and I owed him a lot, to be fair. He was a decent agent. I know agents get a bad name. He was a decent agent for me. And the moves that I got, yeah. So obviously, moving on to Birmingham, which it was a brilliant move. I was there for 8 years. I loved every minute of it. Obviously, it gave me the opportunity to play in the Premier League, scoring a cup final, and all these things that, as a young lad, you dream of coming through. So Birmingham, I owe a lot to, because it gave me a real footing, and probably where I made my name as a footballer.
How does that feel as a player, though, when you're walking out of that dressing room knowing you're going to walk out at Wembley in the cup final? Inside, what are you thinking of at the time? Where you started from, or are you just fixed on the game?
I think you're just fixed on the game. What obviously fans and that don't understand, when you are playing and you don't appreciate it enough when you're playing, all you're doing is just going out and doing your job and just trying your best you can for the team you're playing for. You know, and all them things, and when you're playing in front of 80,000 people, you don't realise. All you're doing is playing a game of football and just trying to do the best that you can. You know, and as much as obviously people say about fans, and they can obviously make or break players, or sort of really upset players, when you're involved in that game and you're concentrating on the game, it's very rare you'll hear anything from what goes on with it. As I heard more playing in front of 400 people than I did playing in front of 80,000. You know, and that's the difference.
Well, I mean, it's a big day for you winning the cup, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, we didn't win. Liverpool to penalties.
Yeah,
we lost on penalties. But for a team from the Championship to take Liverpool to penalties at that moment in time in a cup final was a brilliant achievement for us, you know. And on the day, we probably deserved to win it. You know, we had a penalty that should have been in extra time. And all during extra time, if one side was going to win it, it was us. We were superb. Just disappointed that we lost out on penalties, and that's the luck of the draw sometimes with penalties. You can toss a coin, and obviously Liverpool won, which I was really disappointed about. But obviously to score in a cup final and the way I scored was brilliant for me from a personal note.
Yeah. Now, you know, every time we look at where you move to, it seems to be step up. West Bromwich Albion for £750,000 is your next move. I mean, that's a big club as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, listen, I've been really lucky to play for some really good football clubs, you know, obviously well supported as well with the fans. So if I look back on my career, that'll probably be the standout is the clubs that I played for and the fans. So you go back to Warrington and that, you know. the fans that were there, I know that there wasn't as many as obviously the other clubs that I played for, but they still had the club at their heart, you know. And obviously, you could see it every time you walked out on the pitch, the passion from the fans that were there. It's you can see it every time you walk out on the pitch. So, I was lucky enough to play for some really good football clubs.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Frank Clark said to me that the Orient fans are just as passionate as the Newcastle fans. It's just 40,000 more of the Newcastle fans at the match, you know.
And that's
so, I think he was right, you know, with that.
Yeah, but with regards to the Orient fans, you know, I remember, I think the season we got relegated, I think we only won once away from home, you know, but we still, every away game, we still took 400, 500, 600 fans, no matter where it was, whether it be Hartlepool, Brighton, Plymouth, they travelled in their numbers, you know, and that I think that's always the sign of a really good football club is the numbers that travel away from home, and Orient always had that good travelling support.
It did not really work out for you with West Brom because it was a pretty short stay, wasn't it?
No, obviously Gary Megson signed me, and Gary Megson was top class. I got on with him like a house on fire. As soon as I walked through the door, he made me captain first day that I walked in. And just loved playing for him. He was brilliant. And then it got to, I think it was sort of January time, or maybe just before January, he got the sack and Brian Robson came in. And I just never got on, never see eye to eye with Brian Robson. You know, they do say never meet your heroes. And I looked at him as a player, and he was one of them sort of, one of them players that I looked up to, you know. When he was on that pitch, he was a real warrior. But as a manager, we never see eye to eye. I don't think he rated me as a player, and I didn't particularly rate him as a manager, and that was the way of the world, you know.
It's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
It is, and that was it. And obviously, that was obviously, I think it might have been January, February time he came in, and that was the year we was bottom at Christmas, and we stayed up, and I didn't play the last probably 10 games of the season. And it got to the end of the season. We stayed up. It was a great escape year. We were the first team ever at bottom of the Premier League to stay up, and we did it.
That's right.
And I sat down with him in the summer, not so much with Brian Robson, but with the chairman at West Brom, and he said, look, we've had an offer in from Cardiff. You've got 2 years left on your contract. We're not going to pay you up. You can sit and pick your money up if you want, but if you want to go and be playing football. So I went and had a chat with Dave Jones, who'd just gone in as manager of Cardiff, and as soon as I met him, I wanted to go and sign for Cardiff. It was like similar to what Gary Megson did. He made me captain straight away, went down there, moved down there, and it was probably one of the best moves I ever made. Financially, it weren't. I lost out on a few quid, but from a career point of view.
What were the highlights with him? What would be your standout moment at Cardiff?
FA Cup final, always in and around the playoffs in the Championship. But just Cardiff as a place and Cardiff as a club, just had a real good affiliation down there. Love playing for the fans, and I think as long as you're one of them players that wears your heart on your sleeve and puts in 100% every time you walk on that pitch, then fans they'll take to you, and I think the Cardiff fans did that.
So you had four good years with them, really, and another big move again, Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, I died 4 years at Cardiff. If Dave Jones had offered me a new contract, I'd have stayed. You know, I honestly, genuinely loved it. And I was 32. I felt really good. And then, obviously, he said, I nearly signed for Norwich in the January when Brian Gunn was in charge at Norwich. I went and had a chat with them, and they were trying to sign Mark Hudson. And so I half knew my days were numbered then. But obviously that never happened in January. And then at the end of the season, I signed on a free transfer at Sheffield Wednesday. So by far, probably out of all the clubs I played for, the biggest club I played for, just in terms of fans, in terms of stature of a football club, Sheffield Wednesday was huge. And obviously, it's just a brilliant club to play for. The fans were so fanatical. And when they got behind you, you knew about it. It was a nice and lovely club to play for.
Now, was Peter Eustace back there as a scout or when you went back to Sheffield Wednesday? Because I know he did a bit of work for them.
I see him around a couple of times, but he wasn't sort of, I don't think he was a chief scout. I think he was just there as a guest of the football club. So I've seen him around a couple of times, but I don't think he was working for the club when I was there.
Yeah, I mean, he's a person who got bad press at the Orient, but I personally always liked Peter. I always thought he was a really nice guy. I know people have, you know, got other opinions, but I always found him to be fine.
Yeah, I never had a problem with him. You know, he's the man that gave me my debut, my league debut. You know, and for somebody to do that for a 17-year-old lad, he must have had sort of some big kahunas, as they say, to put a 17-year-old lad and give me his debut. Yeah. He put himself out there to be shot at, and I'm thankful for him for doing that.
Now, you had a couple of years with Sheffield Wednesday, and then, of course, what must have been a little bit of a magic moment for you, really? I mean, you didn't play that many games for them, but to sign for the side you supported as a boy must have been a special moment.
No, brilliant. And how it all came about was hilarious, you know. But Milan Mandarić, I don't know if lots of people all know who he is, but he's the owner of Portsmouth. He bought Sheffield Wednesday. And I was captain of the club. I played so many games. The clause in my contract, it was the second year of my contract. I was 34 years of age. I'll come up to your 34th birthday. And I had a clause in my contract that said, if I played 30 games, I got another year. And I've played 28. Milan Mandarić had bought the club, and he first day he walked in, he's straight away, I want to see Percy. So I've gone in there, knocked on his door. Chairman, how are you? Percy, I love you, man. I love the way you play. Your career has been great, but you're not playing 30 games for me. And that's what he said to me in his office. I went, no worries, chairman. Shook his hand, and that was it. I got paid up, and in the last 6 months of my contract, and then I was a free agent, you know. My contract had been terminated, and within 24 hours, I'd gone and signed for my boys' club, and 24 hours later, made my debut at Leicester away, you know. It was, as you said, I didn't play too many games for Millwall, but to pull on the shirt of the club that you supported as a kid, not so much just for me, but for my dad, who had probably had 600-700 league games that I played. He probably watched 99% of them, you know. He followed me around everywhere, and for him to watch his son go out and play for the team he'd supported for so many years was a brilliant moment for me. And
it's priceless, isn't it?
It is. And I always remember on the Friday afternoon, obviously when it was all going on at Sheffield Wednesday that I'd left and I was signing for Millwall, I just remember ringing him and said, Dad, it's happened. I've signed for Millwall. And he just couldn't believe it, you know, the shock of it. So it was it was brilliant. I don't think my dad bought a drink for the whole year, 18 months I was there with all his mates at Millwall with them sorting out tickets and all that sort of stuff. I don't think he bought a drink for the whole time he was there. So it was great for my dad, and a brilliant time for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you went out on loan to Yeovil and then to Plymouth, and you ended up signing for Plymouth. Now, it's interesting for us at Orient because the man in charge was Carl Fletcher.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I played about, I don't know how many games for Mill, 30 games, something like 25, 30 games. And it came to the end of the season, and I was expecting just to say, like, to shake hands with Kenny Jackett and say, yeah, thanks for the 6 months, it's been brilliant. But Kenny, to be fair to him, he offered me another year's contract, and I was 36 at the time. And I would have been 35, I think. And I was really surprised. I was never one of them players that could sit around and not be playing football. And I needed to be playing football on a Saturday afternoon. And the start of the next season, I wasn't playing. I just went and see him. I said, look, I need to stay out on loan. As long as it's all right with you and you don't need me. So he let me go out on loan with Yeovil. So I knew Terry Skiverton really well. He was the manager.
Yeah.
So I went down and played with Skivo for a month. And as soon as I went out, within a couple of days of going to Yeovil, Peter Ridsdale was the chairman at Plymouth, or he'd gone in to help out as like a consultancy, and he was the chairman at Cardiff. So he rung me within a couple of days of going to Yeovil, and he said, look, Percy, he said, I need you down here at Plymouth. And I was living in the Midlands at the time, and I was thinking, how the hell am I going to travel down there? So I finished my month at Yeovil. Obviously went in and see Kenny Jackett at Millwall, and he said, yeah, you can go. Ended up travelling 300 miles down to Plymouth three times a week, which was a bit of a trek. But as much as anything, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. But to go in there, the club that they were 9 points adrift at the bottom of League Two, and we stayed up with two games to go, which was a brilliant achievement and one of the best things I've done in football.
Now, from the Orient point of view, we had, as you probably saw, you know, the appointment after Justin passed away. They said that Carl Fletcher ticked all the boxes, went in, and it was an absolute car crash, you know, to be absolutely honest with you. And obviously after, 28 days, whatever it was, his contract was terminated. Now, you know, how did you find Carl Fletcher as a manager when you were playing with him?
Carl was, he'd only just finished playing himself, so I think I was actually older than Carl when he was manager, and I was still playing. So he did well. To keep Plymouth up that year, he did really well, but a lot of it was down to Peter Ridsdale, his contacts within the game, because at the time that I signed, he signed Warren Feeney from, I think he was at Cardiff at the time, We signed Paul Watton back from Southampton to Plymouth, and we had a good crop of young lads around the club. But he just signed three or four players through the spine of the side, experienced players that knew football, and I think that's what helped the club out. You know, we sort of looked after the dressing room, and Carl obviously looked after the other side of it. You know, he'd say, no matter what Carl would have done, I think he'd have struggled at Orient. I think whoever was going to come in and take after Justin Edinburgh passed away was going to find it hard, you know. And obviously him walking in there as a manager, you've got to try and do it your way. And I think he's probably walked through the door. This is a guy that I don't know if this has happened or not. He's probably walked through the door, Orient, tried to change a few things around the way that he wanted to do it, and the players have said no. This is the way we want to do it. This is the way that Justin did it. And out of respect for Justin, the player did that rather than what Carl Fletcher wanted to do. And that's it. At the end of the day, as a manager, you're governed by the players that are in that dressing room. Now, whatever Carl Fletcher's done, because he's not a bad manager, do you know what I mean? He's a good bloke, but whoever was going to step into this manager's hot seat at Orient after Justin was going to find it hard.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's sort of not Justin's job anymore, because obviously Carl was sort of in there and, if you like, almost a sacrifice. And now, obviously, Ross is back in and things are ticking over now. I think the club's back in motion now after what was obviously an utter disaster in the summer. But back to you, obviously, so you've kept Plymouth up, you've gone Port Vale, and then you've drifted to Chesham in the non-league.
Yeah, obviously, I left Plymouth, went to Port Vale and played under Mickey Adams, who was another top manager. And he signed me and Lee Hughes in January because Port Vale, I think they were in the top two in League Two, and they just needed to get over the line as a football club, you know, and obviously to get promoted. And he went and signed me and Lee Hughes. I played 20-odd games at the end of that season at centre-half for him. And Lee Hughes played the 20-odd games towards the end of the season and ended up scoring about 15 goals, you know. And that's what ended up getting Plymouth over the line, Port Vale over the line to get promoted. Sat down with Mickey Adams at 36 years of age. And he said, Percy, I think it's time for you to retire. And I went, I didn't feel like I was ready to retire. And I never signed a new contract there. And I went out to Finland for a couple of months to... When I was at 16 at Orient, I went over and played over in Finland for a couple of months then. There's a bit of experience during the summer to keep me fit. And I went out and played for a similar team, but it was the same chairman as who I'd known from when I was 16 years of age of this new team. Yeah. So I went over and played for them over in Finland for the last few months of my professional career. So that was that. And so I ended up playing finishing my last professional game over in Finland, come back and it was January and I couldn't find a club. So went and signed for Chesham in non-league.
And you played quite a few games for them, but then of course you ended up going to Staines and an FA Cup swan song at Leighton Orient.
Yeah, and obviously I played with Mickey Forster, who was manager at Staines. Obviously, once you drop down to non-league football, it's very rare you stay at one place for too long, because there's always somebody out there that's got a little bit more money who wants to offer you a little bit more money. And that was non-league football. I, there was three or four managers that I played under at non-league and sort of stayed quite loyal to them. But yeah, played for Staines in the FA Cup first round at Leighton Orient, and as much as I can't remember the actual score. It finished 7-1, I think it was, something like that.
I think it's 6-1. Don't be too cruel.
6-1 was it?
Yeah.
There you go.
But you got a decent goal, didn't you?
But to score back at obviously Orient where it all started, and the thing that made me sort of a little bit, not sort of choked up, but I remember once I'd scored, I was jogging back, obviously celebrating with the Chesham fans a little bit, not too much because obviously I wanted to respect the Orient fans. But as I was jogging back to the halfway line, I got a brilliant round of applause off of all the Orient fans. So that meant a lot to me, you know, for a club that obviously you started out as a 16, 17 year old, and to go back there as a 37 year old and score and get that sort of reception. It was brilliant for me.
Darren, when Orient were obviously under the cosh under the Italians, and Ian Hendon was the manager, wasn't he, at the time? And
he was
suffering terribly under Bichetti, I know he was. And that was a vital win at the time for him because the pressure was being piled on him.
Yeah. So obviously, when we went in there, we fancied ourselves for an upset because obviously the way the club was going and the sort of run that they was on. I think if I'd have scored the winner, I don't think I'd have got quite the reception that I'd have got from the Orient fans. But I think when we were 4-1 down at the time when I scored, it was just quite a nice touch from them to give me the round of applause that they did.
Yeah, so your non-league career finally comes to an end. You hang up your boots, and how are you finding management?
Really enjoying it. I always said I didn't want to stop playing at the wrong time, you know. And I was 41 and I was assistant manager at Enfield, but still playing. And I got a little knee injury and it just wouldn't recover. I was sort of 2 months and it just wasn't getting any better. And in the end, I ended up having an operation on it just to, because I couldn't coach with it either. It was killing me. So I knew my time was done. Had the operation in the summer. So that was me finished as a player. But then I got the opportunity to go and obviously start my coaching career at Orient, at Oxford, which is a club that obviously I was a young lad as a player and I started with under 16. Now I've gone in and I'm doing the 23. So it's nice for me to get my foot in the door as a young coach, enjoying it. It's hard. It's a lot harder work than playing, but enjoying every minute of it.
So if you look back over 25 years, I say it's a really impressive period of time as a player. Your standout moment as a player, if you had to pick one, what would that be?
I think scoring in the cup final, last minute of the cup final against Liverpool. I think that's probably the most standout and the most memorable bit for me. To do that as a player was brilliant. So I'd say that's probably my standout moment as a professional footballer. But as I said, I just don't think I'd never appreciated it enough as much as what I should have done. As a job and as a profession, it's a great profession, and loved every minute of it.
And your best manager and your best coach, who you think you worked with?
I will say Sitz as a coach. I've played alongside some really, I've played under some really good coaches, you know, the people like Mark Bowen and obviously was with Wales and people like that, and Malcolm Crosby. But as a coach and the start he gave me in football, I'd have to say Sitz. He was top class, and football's the worst for not having him in and around the game. Best manager, obviously I had Brucey at Birmingham, but Trevor Francis, people like that. But the best manager would have been Dennis Smith at Oxford United. He was top class and helped me along in the game.
What's your ambitions as you now, Darren? Now you're on the coaching side of things. Have you got ambitions to be a manager?
Yes, I don't really enjoy. I do enjoy coaching, but I'm a manager. I'm not a coach. You know, and I want to go into management, and the sooner I can get that done, the better. I understand. This is me doing my apprenticeship again. This is me back at Orient as a 16, 17 year old lad, playing Pontins reserve team football. This is me doing my apprenticeship, but I want to be a manager. I want to manage football clubs, you know, and I want to be successful at it. And it's this is the career that I've chosen to do, and hopefully And the hardest thing as a young coach or young manager is getting the opportunity. And hopefully I'll get the opportunity in the next couple of years to go and prove whether I'm good enough, as good a manager as I was as a player.
Well, something tells me you'll get your wish. I think you will. And Dale, thanks very much for joining us on Orient Hour Extra. Really appreciate your time, and all the best to you and your family under the current circumstances. And we wish you every success going forward with your football management.
Top man, Ann. Thanks very much. Thanks for your time. And thanks for the things you've done for us.
Thank you, Dale. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers,
now.
Mate. Bye, pal.